What's up, y'all? It's 10 at 3 time in Tennessee. How are you? I hope you're doing well. Hope everything in your life is going great on this Tuesday, January the 20th, 2026. I hope you are getting prepared for Snowmageddon as it's...
Let's hold the phone there. I mean, yeah, there's a possibility of snow, but let's not oversell it just yet.
Oh, I promise you I was going to say or not.
Or not.
Or not. I promise I was, Tom. I promise I was. I don't want to give everybody the wrong impression here. We never, ever know.
It's like 5 days out. But yeah, this weekend, if you aren't aware, maybe take a look at the forecast. We'll just say that.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. But and Tuesdays are always, I've said this before, I will say it again, because of the quirks of our schedule,
yeah,
Tuesdays are always just, I mean, cutting it close. I'm not kidding here. And this is maybe too much behind the scenes that you want, but like I walk in as the music's playing on Tuesdays. That's how Tuesdays work. Like I try to get stuff done beforehand, but we have a weekly meeting at 2:30. Can't miss it. Bosses are there. Everything's important. We got to do all this stuff. And because of that, sometimes on Tuesdays, unfortunately, we are not able to do some of the, we don't get to do the entire pre-flight checklist as a until we go live on Tuesdays. And I know it's part of the show. It's part of who we are. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. But at the same time, obviously, we want to make the product as good as we can for you. And so Tuesday is always the first little minutes. We're sometimes a little frazzled. We got to get going. We got to, you know, we breathe into it. We kind of exhale as we're going along. No, there's no worry. We got about 57 minutes. We got all the time in the world. And we got a lot to discuss on this program today. That was, first off, I guess we'll start with the smaller news here. Tennessee, we knew this was coming, but Tennessee is not in the final football AP poll of the year for the first time since 2021. And that comes on the heels of Tennessee not being in the AP Hoops poll for the first time in 4.5 years, 91 weeks. I believe that was the longest streak, active streak in the country. So those are gone. The streaks are gone. Long live the streaks. But there is very good news.
What's that?
For Tennessee. The Tennessee Volunteers have a new strength coach who arrived this morning from Indiana. Indiana's strength and conditioning coach, Derek Owings. This is something Tennessee's had in the works for a while. It got done, and they kept it quiet, at least in terms of putting officially things out there. A couple of rumors here and there. Tennessee was going big and bold with the strength coach and had some things wrapped up and don't worry about it, you know, which, of course, when somebody tells you don't worry about it, you immediately start worrying about it more and looking into it and, you know, how those things go. But Derek Owings, who has been with Kurt Cignetti for the past 6 years, 4 years at James Madison and then 2 years at Indiana, helped the Hoosiers win a national championship. That was you can see the fruits of that guy's labor. He's what's happened at Indiana, and we're definitely going to talk about that game too because we got plenty of time today. But what that guy helped Kurt Cignetti build at Indiana is one of the most astonishing sports stories of my lifetime. And I'm always candid about my age, right? I leave it out there. A lot of people don't like people to know exactly how old they are. I got no secrets. I'm 43 years old. I'm Richard Petty years old. And I've been doing this since I was 17 years old. And I watched and consumed a lot of sports before that. So when it comes to sports, especially college sports, but also Major League Baseball, you know, NBA, some NFL, obviously anything and everything soccer, I do have years and years of being around this stuff and being a consumer and then a so-called professional doing this for long enough. All I'm saying is I seen some stuff. I seen some stuff in my time. I don't think I've ever seen, in American sports at least, I don't think I've ever seen a story like Indiana football. That was until this season, until midway through this season, the losingest program in college football history. It got passed. Now it's number two because Northwestern got down to number one. But what that guy and his staff walked into, and yes, it's different in the portal era. Yes, you can bring in people year to year. Yes, that team was old. Yes, yes, yes. That's fine. I don't care. That's Indiana University. That's the Fighting John Mellencamps winning a national championship in football, going 16-0. And I'll be honest, I was late to the Indiana party last year. You can go back and look. I don't delete things. I didn't think Indiana played anybody last year. And I don't think Indiana had a really great win last year. And so when I was talking about should these guys, have they really deserved to be in the playoff, yada, 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 like I stand by that because at the time they had not, they'd won a lot of games, but they hadn't really played anybody. It wasn't like things just, a couple of them were decent names, but not great wins. This year, they've had my attention from the outset. And they put together, just think about the run that Indiana went on. Think about this, seriously. Think about the past four games. Think about what they have done in the playoff. And even before that, really. Ohio State. And during the season also beat Oregon, by the way. So Ohio State crushed. You know, Alabama crushed. And then Miami defeated in Miami for the national title. That's insane. There were a lot of coaches, and I never agree with this, but there are a lot of coaches who, and it's admittedly a little self-serving of them to say some of these things. It's in their self-interest. So I get why they say these things, and I get why I push back on it. So I understand both sides of it. But you've seen Sarkisian, you've seen a lot of other coaches throughout the years, and they've said point blank, I don't think there's ever going to be a 16-0 team now. I don't think it's possible in these power conferences. I just don't see how you can do that and get through the playoff. I don't see how you can go through this whole thing and never lose. Well, the losingest program in college football history just did it. They just did it. It just happened. And I've never seen in American sports a story that compares to this. Now, you could say things like, oh, the Red Sox and Cubs ended their curses and their streaks. Those organizations always had the financial power to go in there and do what they did, and they got to the playoffs enough. And I'm a Cubs fan, so I know this very, very well. Lifelong Cubs fan. These were not scrappy underdogs.
No, it was weird. I was just thinking about this the other night for whatever reason about the Cubs. It's like they were always a great team, you know?
They've always had so many finances.
It's just that when it came to the playoffs, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the most iconic
World Series, they never connected.
One of the most iconic cathedrals in American sports, both of them, right? And owners that don't always pay all the money they have, but they do have it. Yeah. And their ballparks are sold out every single day, all year, every year. Plenty of fans, big market. So them ending that curse, that was just, it's not like that seemed impossible. It just, they had to make better decisions, build better teams, and produce when it mattered most. But Indiana football, in college football, the resources required, I mean, trying to turn a football program, a college football program, from even average or pretty good to really good or great, that is turning an aircraft carrier. Because you're not talking basketball. You bring in a couple guys. Hey, you go pay for two big-time prospects or you get two big-time prospects in college basketball, that's 40% of your starting lineup. So you can already do the math and say, hey, I can flip this thing, right? Football, you've got 85 scholarships. So all your competitors have up to 85 scholarships. And armadas of staffs and built-in infrastructure over a number of years. The difference in the haves and the have-nots is staggering. So, I mean, think about how jaw-dropping like what Vandy's done the past couple of years is. And it is legitimately jaw-dropping. And by the way, Tennessee, shot across your bow here, no pun intended. Look what they're doing in all three of the major revenue sports right now. And then look at baseball, too. Tennessee's been the best athletic department in the SEC for the past maybe three, 4 years.
Yeah, all around,
winning the title. Right now, they ain't the best in their own state in terms of power, in terms of the biggest sports. And now that's production right now. That's not the long-term health of the program. I don't think what's happening at Vanderbilt in the SEC in football is sustainable. I could be proven wrong. I just don't think it's – you would have to change a culture to the extent that they are really using a lot of that money they have and just without shame, without compunction, just outspending everybody.
Yep.
'Cause if they really, really, really wanted to, they absolutely could. With their alumni, with the money they have sitting in couch cushions, there's only a few places in the league that really could, like A&M in Texas, they got a lot of money there. They got a lot of money. But I don't know that there's differences in those two situations. Because Cignetti is what he's done in Indiana. Even at Lee took a couple years to get Vanderbilt even sort of turned a little bit, right? So then he goes into Indiana and like a light switch just comes in and flips it on. I mean, there's no stages to it. There's no, you know, it's not like one of these, you know, rockets going up into space and it has like the different, you know, three or four different ignition sequences and rocket boosters. This was like, he just put it on the block and said go, and it was like Usain Bolt and just ran by people. I've never seen anything like it. And if you're Tennessee, you've taken one of the most important parts of that Indiana program and you've hired it. So my point is, yes, things disappointing. It's a down cycle. Tennessee athletics, and we'll see basketball. I said yesterday, go back and watch it if you want. I'll talk about it a little bit later today too. I don't think you should panic with Tennessee basketball. Now, that's me saying I don't think you should. You do whatever you want. I'm advising against it because I think there's more time here and there's more runway and there's plenty of room for this team to grow, regardless of what happens in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, which, by the way, if they don't get their heads out of their tailpipes, they're going to get run out of that building quickly. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't be concerned. I think how you feel is up to you. I think concern is warranted. I absolutely do. I absolutely do. But panic, let's wait and see. If you're going to complain about postseason Barnes, let's wait till the postseason. All right, let's see what happens. Maybe having a team that kind of goes into there with a little bit lower expectations, or you never know. You just never. Indiana just won the national championship. Don't tell me what is and isn't possible. Don't tell me. I ain't going to listen to you. You tell me. It's like when Kevin Garnett saying anything is possible. He's right. I believe it now. That's the craziest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen a story like this. Never. Never. And I'm not young, but I'm not super old. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen some stuff. I don't think you can sit here and say one night after you see the Indiana football team win a national championship that, like, a Tennessee basketball team that does have plenty of talent can't turn its season around. Like, don't tell me that. I ain't going to listen to you. That's nonsense. Will it? I don't know. Could it? Yes. Yes. Absolutely it could. But for Tennessee football, they just went and hired the man who Kurt Cignetti trusted to build the mental and physical strength of that football team that won a national title. And by the way, I want to make sure I get this number right. Since Derek Owings has been a strength and conditioning coach, a head strength and conditioning coach, the teams that he's been the strength and conditioning coach for are 65-9. All in FBS play, by the way. 65-9. 40-5 in their conference. And that's including 2 years in the Big Ten. So if you're talking about how important a strength coach is, I'll go over this in the second segment. But there are not many people in a program more important than the head strength and conditioning coach. I think there are four people tops more important than him, and maybe just two. That's how important. I think your strength and conditioning coach, not in terms of public facing, because occasionally with, you know, Cochran at Alabama, USC guys that get that sort of level of fame for whatever reason, usually because they've earned it. But you don't see, they're not necessarily in the front window while people are watching. But if you were to build one behind the scenes, they're on the Rushmore in terms of where they are on the scale. They are so important. Like, the key to what Tennessee's done in basketball for years, Garrett Maidenwald has been a huge part of that, a huge part of that, because Tennessee has typically been the most physically dominant team on the floor in most of the games that it's played for a few years now. And that starts with him. It starts with genetics and recruiting, obviously. A lot of these battles are won at conception, if we're being honest. But that piece, and it's not just the physical part of strength and conditioning. Strength and conditioning is also mental. Look at Tennessee baseball. And look at what Quinton Eberhardt did for those guys. It's not just technique that hit all those 440-foot home runs and threw all those 104-mile-an-hour fastballs. All right? That's physical training. That's physical and mental toughness to produce in the biggest moments and win championships. That was built there, and that's why, yeah, it sucked for Tennessee that he went with Tony Vitello to the Giants. But his right-hand man, a guy he's known for years, who's been with the Milwaukee Brewers and been with the Chicago Cubs and others, he's come in and, hey, Josh Elander thinks highly of him. All right, I buy that. But that's why you're concerned when he leaves. So to get a guy like this, and Tennessee's making him, as far as we know, the highest paid strength and conditioning coach in college football history at $1.2 million per year. And we're about to be due for a break. So I'm going to have to pick this up here in just a minute. I don't want to get started and then midway through a point, I got to pick back up where we were. But I'll tell you this. I don't care that he's making $1.2 million a year. I wouldn't have cared at $2.5. I don't care.
They've obviously got the money.
Yes. And I've already told you how important I think that position is in a program. If that's what it took, pay it. USC tried to buy him last year. They got a lot of money, couldn't do it. He didn't go. Tennessee came with an offer, and he couldn't refuse it. And so he gets on a plane just not long after winning a national championship. There's probably still confetti in his hair and his beard. Probably still smells of, spirits. Probably smells of, cigars and spirits. Bleary-eyed, getting on a plane, coming to Knoxville, and you know what? They start winter workouts Wednesday morning. He was here to work today, this morning. Tomorrow morning this time, or tomorrow day this time, they'll have already had workouts done. They've already gotten some winter workouts in. It's nuts. It's nuts, man. It's nuts. We got to talk more about this, and I'll tell you exactly why I don't care how much money it took. And we'll talk about other things, too, including that game, including basketball. We got a lot to talk about, and we're going to get right to it here in just a second. Be right back on 10 at 3.
All right. We're in break.
Secret time.
It is secret time, folks.
I always try to tell people, and I don't know, it's not like I try to exonerate us, but like for the first few minutes of Tuesday, I'm like, guys, just a little bit of patience here. We are, the schedule is what it is. That meeting is what it is every week on Tuesday. We are sprinting in the door to do this. It's going to be like the first day that they need me right at 4 o'clock down the hall.
Yeah.
Where I'll just be like, unplugging this IFB, going and getting the other one, and like, hey, what's going on? Let's talk.
Once again, that's the magic of TV, you know? We got folks that they could be like 5 minutes out to their hit on air, and they'll be like running, sprinting down the hall.
Oh, yeah. And it is the magic of it. And like, I knew before I really started working it every day, I knew there was a magic to TV, but until you really kind of get in there and get plugged into it, mm-hmm. warts and all. It's a rush. It's definitely a rush. And there's times where, you know, you're live, right? And I'm like, and I remember this radio, like you're live right now. And so anything you say or do, anything that comes through this tiny little filter here and comes out, like it stays. And whatever the shot's going on with the camera, it stays. Whatever's going on with the microphone, for the most part, it stays, right? Like it, and so it's, and you never know what's going to happen, and you got to, you know, head on a swivel. But yeah, I mean, kind of like in a much less important manner, kind of like what Derek Owings has done. You get on a plane, you win a national championship that you've been working for your whole life, then you get on a
15
plane,
15 seconds away,
and then you come fly to Knoxville, Tennessee, and hey, by the way, I'm working here now. It's wild, totally wild,
very wild.
Welcome.
Hold on.
Whoa.
And now.
Welcome back to Tenet 3. having a good conversation here with Wes Rucker alongside our Lord of the Streams, Tom Barclay, talking a lot of things. Tennessee getting a strength coach from Indiana. Big, big deal.
It's a big deal and big money, yes. Too.
And it's big money. And I'll tell you, I don't care. 1.2, fine. If he was like 1.5, fine. I know that money is not infinite. I know that at some point, and Indiana's got money too. They got Mark Cuban now dumping whatever he's got in there, which is a lot. And they either couldn't or didn't want to match it or couldn't. I don't know. But maybe he just was like, I want a title here. There's nowhere to go but down. I'm going to go somewhere else and start a challenge again. That's how these guys are psychos, some of them. That's how they think. And you have to be a psycho. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, they will spend their entire lives, like from the time that they become a player or a coach, I want to win the whole thing. I want to win a championship.
Yeah.
And they will spend years, decades working to get there. And then they will get there and they will enjoy it for about 30 seconds. And then they will go, well, we got to repeat now. And it's like, what were you working for? Wasn't this like the goal? And I'm not saying it should be everything, like you should just retire, but dude, go to Disneyland, go to Europe, go to a beach, see your family, chill out for a little while. and
immediately hop into the next
big
thing.
And
right?
I know the calendar is what it is, right? And Tennessee started winter workouts now, and they have to address what's going on with the college football calendar. It's crazy, and it's leading to some of this. But I was talking to actually someone sent me a message on Twitter earlier about this and said, like, okay, are these guys psycho or is this calendar psycho? And I said, oh, there's no doubt the calendar psycho. But in order to sign on to this now,
I think the people also
you
have to
also
be, yeah.
If you want to sign on for something that's psycho, you're at least part psycho yourself, right? Like, I mean, I don't mean, and again, I know that word could have connotations. I don't mean it in a bad way. The way that I mean it, and I want to stress this, is like dedicated to the craft, like committed, like 10 toes in, right? Just all over it. And I just can't imagine, like, you work so hard. It'd be like, and I know that there are people, like, for instance, in our business who would get Emmys or Pulitzers, and that's what, maybe it's not why they got into it, but it's, you know, you'd like to have them, right? Like, some of the awards I've gotten, they're probably collecting dust at the house, but I'm glad that I got them. But you get them, and you're like, okay, that's cool. Now what's next? So it's not maybe entirely different, but when it's a natty, you know, like, and I know actors get Oscars and they keep working, right? Like, I understand this. But usually after shooting a movie, they'll go on vacation. They'll take a break, right? Some of them take a year or two off, and they're like, nope, I'm good now. And Daniel Day-Lewis is like, if I see something cool, I'll come back. Or Joe Pesci's like, I'm going to go play music now. But, you know, when Scorsese's making something, I'll come back and hang out with him again. You know, like, it's – but the way their brains work, I'm impressed by it. I think it's awesome. I also think it's crazy. And – it's, hey, but this guy, and the more that you read about Derek Owings, and again, it's not like with what Indiana's done the past 2 years, it's not like there's a tremendous amount of bad coverage there. You know, no one's like looked under the hood and been like, oh, this is awful. They're winning. a lot. Haven't found any serious wrongdoing. People have complained that they're old, but that's the rules. As far as we know, they ain't broken them. And when you see how detail-oriented Kurt Cignetti is, like how disciplined his teams are, to the point where I was shocked they had a couple of the penalties they had late last night, because they're usually a metronome. They usually don't make mistakes. Maybe the moment got to them, I don't know. But a couple of mistakes they don't normally make. But still not as many as Miami made, and they won the game and they earned it. But the mental discipline, the toughness that they have, the physicality, everything is so detail-oriented there. And when reporters talked to Cignetti about Derek Owings, he basically said, I trust him to the point where I don't look over his shoulder. He knows what I want, and he knows if he gives it to me, I'm not looking over his shoulder. So I don't need to manage him. Early on when I hired him at JMU, I told him what the expectations were, and he's always delivered, and that's one less thing I got to worry about. And when you hear a guy who's that detail-oriented talk about that guy, who's still, I think, only like 32 years old, so he's still young. And then you go back and read stories about this guy when he was a player at Mercer. He was like a wide receiver, tight end, hybrid type. He's a Michigan native. He's from just south of Ann Arbor. And he starts his career at Eastern Michigan as a player. Doesn't play a lot, I think. Then he goes down to Mercer, which at that point, and I think still is FCS, down there in Georgia. And he was the kind of guy who thought he might want to be a football coach, but then he decided he wanted to be a strength coach. And he started, and I'm not making this up, he said, claims that he would take food scales with him to eat his meals in college as a player to start learning exact proportions of what kind of fuel, because they don't call it food, they call it fuel, and would take journals about how much he ate, what he ate, why, how much he slept. And he was doing this as a player to kind of get started on all this. And he was he's a smart guy. He was, I think, an academic All-American, or at least academic All-SoCon when he was at Mercer. And he's that detail-oriented in terms of, again, I say it in the nicest way possible, psychos. Who he's a nerd about this and lives it. He's committed to it. And the accountability within that Indiana program has gotten them, that got them where they were. Without that insane level of accountability, they don't get where they got as quickly as they got there. It's not possible. And everybody always talks about that word, accountability. Well, when you actually see it in practice, you see why people talk about it so much, because it is that important. And he did work with Heupel 1 year at UCF in 2018, so there was a connection there. He was an assistant strength coach, Heupel's first year, I think, as a head coach down there. And so he knew him. I guess he would have hired him at one point, or had one of his guys hire him. And so there was a connection there. But this guy, one of the things I've learned in doing this as long as I've been had the benefit of doing it, is that whenever a new strength coach comes in, immediately you start hearing, oh, how bad the last guy was, right? Because you're like, oh, every new strength coach has all these cutting edge techniques and everything. And he makes it sound like the previous, you know, they make it seem like whoever he's replacing just had, you know, dudes in a room throwing rocks at each other or something. Like that's, you know, That's how these things go, and I'm sure these stories will be written, will be said on air, if we get access to this guy and some of what they're doing. And so there will be lots of positive coverage here, but I don't know any way to spin this as a bad thing, if I'm being honest with you. I try to be a guy who, and not to be, you know, I'm not a devil's advocate type. That's my wife, and it drives me nuts. And she admits it, and I'm like, okay, well, you've admitted that. That's usually the first step to stopping that, isn't it? But no, just who she is. That's okay. Everything else, darn near perfect. Just that devil's advocate part that grinds the gears just a little bit. Love you, baby. Don't worry. But I try to be someone as a reporter doing this, and even as an opinion, as an opinionated reporter or opinion reporter who combines the things, even then, I try to take what looks like a bad situation and at least present why it might be good or why it might be okay. And when you see a situation that looks really good, out of fairness, you try to point out, okay, well, here's maybe a concern. You just want to inform people. You want to inform people the best you can, put as much as you can out there, and then let them decide what they think about it. So it's not our job to think for you, but I just think we are so, and especially if you go to journalism school for this, not that you have to go to school for journalism to do this. I think it helps, obviously, but you don't have to do it, right? Like you don't have to go to school for something to be great at it, unless maybe we're talking doctor, you know, nuclear engineer, things of that nature. But there's all kinds of times where people get a degree in one thing but end up working in something else. So it's not, there's no judgment here. But when you get trained for this, it's just hammered into you from the very, very beginning. Facts, 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 facts. All sides, all sides, all sides. So it's not like, I mean, it's not like if one person tells you the grass is green and the other tells you the grass is blue, it's not just your job to go out there and say, this guy says the grass is green, this guy says the grass is blue. Part of the job is to go outside and tell people what color the grass is. And that's so, but you do, as part of that, you say, by the way, this guy said it's green, this guy said it's blue, and when we went and looked outside, it was green. So you're at least presenting the other side. You're saying, this person says this. Now, we got no evidence of it, but this is what this person says. So this person has a public enough job or something that we need to present this side to you, even if we know that it's almost certainly not true. And so what I'm saying is that's why I think people occasionally, and I understand why, they'll get a little miffed if, like, you know, you got a Heisman Trophy winner and somebody's writing a story or saying something saying, well, here's one little thing about his game that if it, you know, teams can expose this, there's a little bit of concern here. Some of these numbers are a trend you don't like. And I understand why people maybe don't want to hear that. But you're not, if you're doing this job correctly, you're not trying to put your thumb on the scale. What you're trying to do is just inform people, by the way, just giving you a heads up that if we can see this, I guarantee you the opponent can see this, and this is what it is. Just like when things are going bad, you're not carrying water for somebody by saying, hey, here's why it could get better. There are some underlying metrics here that say this could end better than you think it does. And people will say you're carrying water. Well, and maybe in some cases people are doing that. In fact, I know there are people in this business who do that. I wish they didn't, but they do. That's life. But all you're doing is telling people, hey, this looks bad right now, but if you tilt this thing just about 20, 30 degrees, you can see a little glimmer of light there that things could be better. And you're not doing your job, I think, if you don't mention that. Now, you're not telling anybody that they need to think it's okay. You're just putting it out there. And that's not to absolve us of responsibility. It's just to say how we do things and what they mean and what they don't mean. And I'm saying all of that to tell you that I'm still looking. I don't know about any concerns with Derek Owings. Like that's what I'm saying. And again, we'll have more time to look into this and we'll have to and yada yada. Maybe there's something going on there. We never know for sure. Rarely do we know for sure at the beginning. But I don't see a lot of reason to think this is anything but tremendous news for Tennessee football. Now, how he messes with the staff, we'll see. Obviously, Cignetti and Heupel, two different kinds of personalities. They're actually pretty similar in some ways. But I'll tell you where they're not similar at all. the penalties from their football teams. They are not in the same stratosphere. Heupel's teams, and I've said this for years, because of the pace Tennessee plays at, there are going to be more penalties. Because if you do anything faster, you're going to make a few more mistakes. So there's a little bit of allowance there. Plus, think about it. Step back and think about it. More plays in a Heupel game than most other games. You're playing faster, which is a few more mistakes. There's also more plays in a game, which means more mistakes. So it's not necessarily about the total number as much as it is about the percentages and the frequency and the timing. But by any objective measure, Tennessee throughout Heupel's tenure, on balance, been pretty bad with penalties. And Indiana the past couple of years, I think, has been the least penalized team in Power Four football. And had this year one of the best scoring defenses in the country and one of the best scoring offenses in the country. Some of the best efficiency numbers in the country. And it didn't turn over a lot. They didn't commit a lot of penalties. And if you don't understand this, please try to understand it now. That starts with the strength and conditioning coach. It also starts with the kind of players you recruit and how you coach them. But I said this, I think, in the first segment, and it's worth doubling down on. Strength and conditioning is not, never has been, and never will be just a physical thing. It's a mental thing. You are teaching young athletes that they can overcome things here. They can overcome physical things here. And it's a mindset. And it's accountability. It's timing. It's being on time. It's doing every single squat. If it says 8 and you can physically do 8, do 8. And do them the right way. Don't cheat. Doing a push-up, get your chin on the ground or it doesn't count. That's where all of this starts. That's why the off-season head coach is so important. That person sets the tempo. And they set the tempo almost every day at practice, too, when they're stretching, getting guys ready. They set the tone for a lot of this. This is, I think, head coach is more important. And I think you could make an argument that QB1 is more important. And if you really, really wanted to, you could say the offensive and defensive coordinators are more important. Maybe. Now, I would say at most, in my opinion, it would be the head coach, number one. Number two, QB1. Number three, the coordinator who comes from the side of the ball the head coach didn't coach. So if you're Josh Heupel, it's the defensive coordinator. If you're Nick Saban, it's the offensive coordinator. And I had the strength coach in there. Those are the four people, I think. Now, if I thought more about it, you might say, hey, you're an NIL person or yacht. Okay, fair enough. I'm talking historically. Those, to me, are the Rushmore figures in a program. Head coach, QB1, coordinator who comes from the other side of the ball from the head coach, strength coach. Those, to me, are the four. And, hey, QB1, we know Tennessee's taking a risk there, right? But head coach, you know what you're getting. In Heupel, better or worse. You have made, by all accounts, a huge upgrade at defensive coordinator. No offense to Tim Bakes, who I think is a good football coach. Jim Knowles is known as one of the best in the business. And no offense to the previous strength staff, but look at what Indiana football has just done with their strength coach. So, yeah, looks like an upgrade, right? That's pretty good. Now, if you'd gotten to Sam Leavitt, you'd be talking about a heck of an offseason. But I still think it's been a pretty good start to the offseason so far for Tennessee. I do. I think this is big news for Tennessee, and I don't want to minimize that. I think it's good news for Tennessee. Now, we'll see. He's got to get to work. And, by the way, that skinny quarterback Tennessee's got, George McIntyre, I urge you to go look at Fernando Mendoza when he arrived at Indiana at about 200 pounds and look at the 225 to 230 pounds he is now. And that's in 1 year. And he had to weigh in every single week to be 225 or he was in trouble. So that started with Derek Owings. So, hey, you see where this is going? Now, I'm not saying he's going to go win a Heisman, but I'm saying, hey, there's some good stuff going on there. We're going to step away. We got one more segment after we take this quick break. We'll be back and talk a little bit more about what I think is a good day for Tennessee football. And And yeah, that's you like good news when you get it. And they got some right now. We'll be right back. Yeah, I was a little late in getting us to that one, Tommy, my bad.
Well, it wasn't entirely your fault. Our little thing that starts the break there decided, you know what, I'm just going to reset there real
quick. You know what, you could have not told me that and just told me it was my fault, and I would not have known any difference.
Oh, no, it was fine.
I would not have known.
It was only like a couple
I'd have been like, that's my B. That's my B.
It's all good.
Because we had yesterday we had a couple little hiccups we had to get through, but that again, that's the magic
that
of what
the
we're
magic
doing
of
here
live.
That is the magic of it.
I
no takebacks.
I live for the live TV aspect of things.
It's funny. I say no takebacks.
Yeah.
We did go in yesterday afterward and redo the first 15 seconds of the show just to make sure everything was patching together correctly. So so there were
people who watched the replay may have got a different experience than the live.
Yeah, they're looking about sometimes look happens. About 15, 20 seconds there. You might see just a little bit of a blur there. A little bit of surgical work there to get that done. We hadn't had to do that in a while. But you know what? That again, it's the magic of doing this live. Mm-hmm. And I think it dovetails nicely with what we like to present as a mostly informal gathering. Now, there's formality to it. Look, we're in a really nice room. We got some really nice stuff in here. We got some stuff we can do that nobody else around here can do. It's awesome.
It is great.
It's great. So, it is serious. We are, you know, technically professionals in the sense that we're paid to do this. And we do take it seriously. But
about 30 seconds.
I say this all the time. I take the business seriously. I don't take myself seriously. I don't think people get tired of that. And I think I took myself too seriously in my 20s. And I've spent like the past 15 years trying to undo that. You learn. You know what I mean?
That feeling.
You do.
Yep. Still have 5 seconds.
5, 4, 3.
Oh, there it reset again. There we go.
Welcome back to 10-3 here, Wes Rucker, alongside Lord of the Streams, Tom Barclay, talking Tennessee, mostly, I would say, football today on Tuesday, January 20th.
It's been a good way to wrap up the whole, you know, the whole season here. Where portal's closed, right?
The portal entries are closed. Yeah, you can still pick a place. Well, I guess maybe some Indiana and Miami players, I guess, could matriculate maybe
really?
Now. I that used to be the rule.
Oh, I guess, actually, you're probably right on that, actually, since their season literally just came.
Yeah,
to
I think
end.
So.
It's
we'll
a
see.
Bit different for them.
Although coaches used to hate that because they're like, "Why am I getting punished for this? I can't take guys, but then later on, guys can leave, and so the whole thing is messy." And they may have cleared that up. I honestly should know that, and I don't. So I would apologize on the front end for saying that I'm not positive that's still the case. But to your larger point, yes,
putting the bow on it. Yeah,
unless a coach is fired or something like that, you can't really go in.
At this point, we shouldn't be seeing too much of that. You know,
you would
usually happens at the end of a bad season.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be like
the end of a bad season.
You know, guess what, Mario Cristobal, you lost the Natty on the final drive. You're out. Now, I would say that some of the stuff that Cristobal's done this season has been a little bit interesting, but all's well that
can't
ends
argue
well.
With
got,
the results,
got
you
to
know?
The Natty, right?
Exactly.
If Carson Beck makes a little better throw, maybe things turn out a little differently. You know, but that's sports, and that is when you think about. And there are times where, like I do, I'll think about this, and then I'll like laser focus on it. And then I'll step back and not think about it for a while, and then I'll think about it again, and I'll really like think about it heavily. Is how much time, how much work, how much blood, sweat, and tears are put into being an athlete at the highest level? And I think about it in two cases most often. I think about it for like guys who are good college players but won't necessarily be pros. And then I think about it like pros at the end of their career, no matter how good or bad they've been. I think about how much work they've put into this and how all of that can come down to something you can't control, which is what somebody else does or the way a ball bounces or a holding call that a ref does or doesn't see. Or if you're Ole Miss, the PI that wasn't called in the end zone at the end of that game against Miami. And you just think about these things, and it's wild I mean, it's the magic of it, right? It's the magic of it, but so much of it, nearly everybody ends their season every season as a loser, right? You can win, and you know, if you win your last regular season game, but you don't make the playoffs, you didn't technically end a loser, but you technically ended a loser.
Yeah.
And then you get into the playoffs, you either win the whole thing or you end on an L. And it's just, it's why I've, when I think about it, it's maybe the thing that I respect most about the people who are in that business is that it is so much time. And again, we're not talking about someone like, you know, serving their country in the military or anything like that. Like, but in some situations, some of these sports, you are kind of putting your body and your life on the line in some of these sports. Sometimes you just are.
I mean, football for sure.
Yeah. I mean, football
for sure.
And, you know, and
that's
you're
a physical contact sport. You're in,
yeah. Know, and then you think about like, you know, like race car drivers and things like that. And, you know, like anytime a basketball player gets 10 feet off the ground, somebody, you know, cuts his legs out from underneath him. Like, hey, baseball hits you in the dome. Like, hey, and even if you don't have something that catastrophic, you're not going to be able to like pick your kids up when you're in your 40s because your knees aren't going to allow it.
Once again, I don't think anyone plays at a high level athletic without suffering some sort of like damage, you know?
Yeah.
And, it could be something small, but at the same time, it's still going to impact your life.
So I'm saying like, listen, and there have financial rewards for this. Okay. And I get all that. I'm not saying let's put them on a higher plane of existence from the rest of us. They're humans like us. You cut their arm, it's going to bleed. And so, but they put that much work into this, and then it can just end, and you can't control it. Or you did your very, very, very best. Your teammates did their very, very, very best, and you just weren't as good as the other guy, or the other girl, the other person, the other kid. Whatever you want to call it. And that to me, there's something so sort of impressive about that. Even if like most people end up being like Icarus or Sisyphus or, you know, you're flying too close to the sun, you're rolling the ball up the hill and it comes right back down. You know, that's what you're doing here, most of them. But they just go right on about it and they go on and do it. And that to me is so impressive. But because there's a chance that it does work out. Like Fernando Mendoza grew up 2.2 miles, I think, from Miami's campus. His dad played for Miami. His dream was to play for Miami. He wanted to play for the U. They would not even let him walk on. They did not even let him walk on to the team. They declined that opportunity. So he goes somewhere else. He ends up being a good player at Cal as a two-star recruiter, wherever he was, then comes to Indiana. Wins a national title. And he wins it in Miami, playing Miami. I mean, again, could you make this up if you tried?
It's a great story.
We talked about Indiana on top of this.
Yeah.
And just that alone. Either Fernando Mendoza in and of himself, or Indiana in and of itself, or Cignetti, 66 years old, in and of himself. Being an assistant at a Nick Saban team years ago and saying, you know, I'm going to go be a D2 head coach because I just want to be a head coach. Saban's like, really? You want to go do that? He's like, I want to be a head coach. I think I can do this. By golly, he could. And then even the last significant play of the game last night was a pass. Carson Beck threw, intercepted by an Indiana defensive back who went to Miami Northwestern High School. Could you make this up if you tried 10 times? It's one of those deals, and it's such a, gosh, I don't love cliches, but they're cliches for a reason because they're often true.
Yeah.
If you turned in that script to someone, to a screenwriter or to a director, to a producer, to a studio, they almost certainly would not believe it. They would be like, listen, we're all about making magic here in the movies, but dude, this can't happen. And you're like, yeah, but like the Incredible Hulk could never really happen either. And you do that. That's not a thing. You know what I mean? Like, we've never been to Mars, yet you've got shows about what it's like if we live there. You do all these things, right? Like, you know, like the Walking Dead, as far as we know, hopefully could never happen. Zombie movies, hopefully, those don't come real. That's talk about nightmare fuel. But they're like, yeah, but those things are all more believable than all this thing happening with Indiana football. Dude, nobody's going to believe this. This is garbage. This could not happen. This would not happen. And because that combination of things, it's remarkable. And even if, let's say this is one of those deals where it's like the Patriots, where at first when they come do this thing, it's a great story, these plucky underdogs or whatever doing this thing, and then they become annoying and you can't stand them. And even now you're like, you guys were not bad enough for long enough to already be good again. This is ridiculous. And your fans are what they are. Love you, Bastin, but they are what they are. And you see all these things. Even if Indiana becomes like some sort of powerhouse now where eventually it annoys you because Cignetti, you're like, dude, he's just joyless. He sucks the joy out of all this. This isn't fun anymore. They're just a metronome out there. This is like when Saban was at Bama. It's just not even fun. Even if that happens, that should not take away from the magic of what we just saw. And I hope that unless you are a fan of a team that Indiana beat this year, or you're a fan of Purdue, obviously, they don't really like each other. You're a fan of Notre Dame, okay, that's fine. There's a few subsets of people. If Indiana beats your team to win this thing, so like, you know, Oregon, Ohio State, Bama, Miami, okay, fine. You're never going to look back at this and think it was cool, probably. That's fine. If you're a Purdue, Notre Dame fan, okay, in-state, I get it. You might never, this is your nightmare. This is what you thought, how could this ever happen? If you're a Purdue fan, you're thinking, how good have we been in basketball for how long and we've not won a title? And the only thing we could say was, well, we suck at football too, but we're better than you, Indiana. Oh, now they've won a title. You still haven't. So if you're a Purdue fan, yeah, boy, this sucks. But the magic, man, last night, something that you might never see the likes of that again. And if you're, I get it, if you're not a soccer fan, that's fine. But I love it. Like, I'm monitoring the Arsenal game right now on my phone as I'm doing this show. By the way, 2-1 at Inter Milan. Hey-o. Still got to finish that. That's going to be a tough game. But Leicester City winning the Premier League title in 2016 was something that just would never seem possible when you know financially what they are compared to financially the teams they're playing against, like juggernauts. And even I, as an Arsenal fan, who, by the way, they came in second to Leicester that year, and Arsenal kind of choked to let Leicester win the thing. Even I can sit here and go, man, that really wanted that title, and it always kind of sucks. But it was also cool because we'll never see that again. And I hope that unless you're somebody who just can't stand IU, which is fine, rivalries are what they are in sports, and they're great. But there's just very few times in sports where you watch something. You can go to a game every day and see something you've never seen before. Like, I don't know how many baseball games I've been to in my life or watched in my life. I couldn't even count them in terms of either being a player or being, you know, a journalist or just being a fan. I could not count them. How many I've watched, played in, or seen, or whatever. And you could still see something brand new every single day. Every day. But most of it's like, I mean, I've never seen that before. That's kind of interesting, but I'll probably forget about it, you know. But like Indiana football winning a national title, that is something you could be right now. What's the youngest a person could be and have like a good cognitive memory of this? Like 5, 6 in terms of like, they remember part of it. I don't remember my childhood. Some people do. My wife's got really good about remembering things. I don't.
In terms of remembering something like that, maybe, as you said, so five or six would be the earliest.
Let's say 5 or 6, yeah, or whatever, being kind, unless you're like
a diehard 4-year-old. Yeah,
yeah, maybe. You know. But like, you could live for another 100 years and never see that. And your children and their children could live for 100 years and they might never see that. Anything quite like that. That's kind of cool. I occasionally, like, I love what I do, and there's nothing else I'd really want to do other than maybe teach history, maybe, or work, you know, like, as a gardener. I love flowers and vegetables and all those things. But, like, you need these kind of jolts occasionally to remember, oh, wait, this is magical. This can happen. And it's a win for little guys everywhere. It's why sports are awesome. It's why sports can give you things that very few things that are not sports in this world can match. It's just different, obviously, but there's a magic about sports in that way that's amazing. And congratulations to Indiana. Let no one take that away from you, especially my wife's cousins who all work up in Bloomington. They were a handful at Christmas. Just imagine Easter and stuff now. Oh, they're going to be walking in big and bad. But hey, what? You know what? Earned it, because they've been the butt of jokes forever, and now who's laughing, right? But hey, Tennessee just took the strength coach, so maybe Tennessee can be laughing at other people in a year or two, right? That's the plan. That's the plan. Guys, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And at this rate, I don't know if we're going to have this much to talk about in 23 hours, but we are going to have a lot. And if not, we're going to have a good time anyway. So we'll see you in about 23 hours.